Right, so tonight I'd like to talk about the what's called the two wings of the Dharma. So the Dharma, we can think of it as, in some ways, it's the Buddha's teachings, but not to feel like this is a religious class. You can also think of it more as just understanding the nature of how things really are. And during this class, we're learning the basics of mindfulness meditation, how to really perceive what's arising directly, free of our preconceptions, our prejudgments, seeing things with more clarity, more direct actual seeing what's here, not our projections of it. And that's someone asked, I had a chat about that question with Rachel's question around seeing another person. So when the learning how to meet a sound, meet a sensation really simply, very directly, without resistance, without adding anything to it. That allows us to actually take off these layers that we automatically apply of preconception, of bias, of prejudice, all of these things that we add to our moment's experience. So we go out into the world, that same process is not meant to just stay here on our meditation practice, but actually show up in our lives. And daily life practice, and particularly relational practice, is a great way to see how we add things to that moment's experience, the moment experience of seeing another person, how we add something to that. It could be, pleasant or unpleasant, it could be positive, it could be negative, but something that's added to that moment's experience. And that confines that person. It puts that person in a box, in a certain category of our own mind, of our own conditioning. And so learning to recognize that first of all, and not add to it, and actually to be free of it, really liberates other people, allows people to be just who they are. And as Rachel was saying, if we're able to do that as a human species, I mean, how much suffering would fall away? The suffering caused by prejudice, by racism, by sexism, all these discriminatory processes of creating the self and other would fall away. And there would be so much more ease and harmony in this world. And so the practice, it points toward that. And this is an invitation for each one of us to bring that forth. Whether it's a stranger or someone that we've been with for decades, is can I see that person in a fresh way? And learning to do that with ourselves is an essential part of that. And this actually ties in nicely to this topic of wisdom and compassion, these two wings of the Dharma. Because we often have a bias toward one or the other, just kind of whatever our conditioning is, that we may be more, on the one hand, very oriented toward our emotions, to what our heart feels, and that's what we really pay attention to. On the other hand, we might be more oriented through our minds and through our intellect, and that's what we've emphasized and focus on. As we start to learn to meditate, it's natural that that kind of bias or that imbalance will show up, that we tend to practice through, just through sensing and feeling our hearts, or we might be just practicing through our minds and trying to analyze everything. And so the practice is really flourishes best when both of these are balanced. And most people need to go through a level of rebalancing. And so, this may be really where you need to be right now in your practice, or it may be something in a few years to kind of come back and realize, oh, I've really kind of need to find this counterbalance. Also, this time in the class, it's like we're starting to really become more and more sensitive to our experience. It's like we're learning to listen more and more deeply to our own inner knowing, our own, the sensations of our body, the subtle expressions of emotion. All these things start to reveal themselves because our sensitivity is increasing. And so it starts to, in that process, it's almost like a dried up sponge that you add some water to it. It starts to fluff up. In that fluffing, we start to feel more. Sometimes it can feel like, wow, I didn't realize how angry I was or how much fear there might be. And we maybe blame the meditation for not working. And actually, the meditation is just revealing what's always been there, actually becoming more present to what's actually here. And so that's why compassion is so helpful at this stage in the practice. Because some of that inner pain, or as one teacher called it, the pain body starts to manifest itself. We start to see it more clearly. And to learn to bring compassion into our meditation, to not just look with a sense of wisdom, is so helpful. So how can we recognize where this balance is and how to rebalance ourselves? So let's first look at, you know, what happens when we're out of balance with, let's say, wisdom. This is a story that I like to share, and this is, you know, this is my interpretation of my grandfather's experience. But it was my sense of what was going on. So he was near the end of his life. You know, he was dying from prostate cancer and on a hospice care. And I was lucky enough to be able to spend, you know, some time with him at that point in his life. And I'd been doing some hospice volunteering and the Dharma practice, so I was really, you know, present as I could be at that point in my life for what he was going through. And he would sometimes just talk about his experience. And he talked about this one phrase. He was a Christian man, and the phrase, "This too shall pass," and how he felt that was often one of the most significant phrases in the Bible, and how that, you know, looking at that from his own life coming to an end. And as I heard him, you know, I listened and I agreed with him. And I also had a sense that there was perhaps a philosophy that he was holding to help make this difficult transition make more sense. And then a few days later, he wanted to shave. He was usually a clean-shaven gentleman, and he hadn't been able to shave for a month or so. So he cleared all the hallway and took him down in the wheelchair to the bathroom. And I always remember when he first saw his face, and he saw how much his face had changed, how much more emancipated he had been, how much more haggard he was, how his body was fading. He said, "Is that me?" You know, that image of seeing that reflection, "Is that me?" And this too shall pass, his body shall pass. And so life can often teach us this quality of going in from the idea of something, the concept of something, and through suffering and actually bring it into the reality, into our hearts. And so compassion has this power to rebalance wisdom if we listen to it. And life will give us those sorrows, those losses, those pains. You know, many of us have talked about that, maybe our physical pain. I'm sure there's pain of loss in this group. There's pain of failure, of dreams being changed. I mean, this is part of being human. And we can use our practice in a way, especially if we tend to be a little bit more heady, to bring us back into our bodies, to bring into this present moment. And this balances wisdom with compassion. Now, on the other hand, we may be more heart-oriented. We may not be the problem of trying to feel. It's actually the problem that we feel too much. We become overwhelmed by the intensity of our emotions. We feel like we're so empathetic that we just feel the sorrows of all the world. And so in this way, wisdom starts to bring us into balance also. Because when we're caught in, you know, just we feel so deeply, but we don't have that ground underneath us, it can be overwhelming. So some things we can play with this. And one instruction that many people have found very helpful, as we sit, and so, you know, I'm using the metaphor for sitting, for meditating. So you could be walking, you could be, you know, laying down, whatever you might be doing. You're simply noticing what's present here. And especially when something painful arises, see if you can allow it to be fully received, but also allow it to fully move through you. Almost like you're open fully in the front, in the heart area, but also fully open between the shoulder blades. I learned this from a teacher who was on a retreat herself, and at the end of the retreat, just noticing how overwhelmed she was, how sensitive she was, and that made her feel overwhelmed by all the sorrow, all the pain in the world. And her teacher said, well, you're open in the front. You're letting everything in, but you're not letting it move through you. So it becomes overwhelming. So this can be a helpful practice for us, is to sit with that sense of being permeable in our bodies. So pain can be fully acknowledged, fully felt, but you allow it to flow through you. This is taking that with, when we often get caught up in the pain, we're taking this personal, making it so personal. And learning to see the impersonal is bringing the wisdom to balance this. I learned this also in a class I took. I actually was more of a year-long investigation into death and dying as a spiritual practice. And my teacher, Rodney Smith, would give us these homeworks to help us integrate the topic, just much like we do in this class. And one of the homeworks was to go to a graveyard. And, you know, we were all kind of getting really sensitive to this quality of our own mortality and feeling also the grief of all the ones we've loved who have passed. And, it, you know, it started to get that sense of your heart was too full. It was like too much to hold. And so going to the graveyard and just noticing all the gravestones and reflecting on all the tears that have been shed for those people who have died, all the grief, all the sadness. As I did this exercise, that my personal pain started to shift into the universal pain. I started to see that, oh, my own pain, it's part of being human. It's part of being, you know, having a caring heart. And when I started to reflect on all the people who have also died in this graveyard and grieved, people have grieved their loss, and expanding throughout the world and throughout time, suddenly the pain became, as I get expanded to a much larger container, like I was able to hold that and realize this is not just my own personal story. It is personal, but it's shared. And so this, the movement from that wisdom helps with compassion is trying to teach us this impersonal nature of suffering. From the Buddha's time, there was it's very touching story about this woman who lost her only child, and she was so overcome with grief that she couldn't, you know, let go of the fact that her child had died. In fact, she had, you know, carried her dead child with her, and she would go to different people asking for help, and none of them could say they could help her. And so finally, she went to see the Buddha, and the Buddha said, "Okay, I can help you with your grief. I can help you with that. But to do that, I need some medicine." And what that medicine is a mustard seed. Okay, so mustard seed is a very common in India at that time, very common herb that every household would have abundance of it. But it has to come from a household who has not been touched by loss, that no one has ever died, that no one's ever experienced loss. So she go to house after house, sure, asking for a mustard seed and also asking, has anyone ever died in this household? And of course, every household had experienced loss. And the more she did this, the more she realized this is not just my own personal pain. It's just the universal pain of a mother losing her child. And so the pain was still there, but it was held by this much larger container. It was held by the power of wisdom. So these two elements of wisdom and compassion are really essential to bring into our practice. And again, depending on, you know, our conditioning, our life's events, we may be biased toward one or the other, more toward the knowledge base and just intellectual, or more toward the emotional. So learning to really understand how can I balance that? How can I bring knowledge into true wisdom and have it be supported by the reality of compassion, bring it into my bones. And so too with compassion, to realize that compassion needs to be balanced by the power of wisdom. And then later tonight, we'll explore a practice called loving kindness, which is a way of cultivating warmth of heart, of kindness, and of compassion toward ourselves and others. And I'd like to just conclude with a poem called Kindness This is written by a Palestinian poet named Naomi Shihab Nye. And this poem really speaks to this balancing of wisdom and compassion, how they both come together in this, in the way she describes it. So, Kindness by Naomi Shihab Nye. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved. All this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness is the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend.